This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
It does not include poison pill riders that would prevent Democratic support or, frankly, Republican support. It does not fund President Trump's border wall, which, of course, he had promised the American people that they would not pay for.
That's Steny Hoyer, budget bill, boom. And like that, some of it is approved, but ultimately others thrown out, meaning some of what the president wanted, as Hoyer said there, is in, and some of it is on the floor. But it moves forward, I suppose, and that is key now that it's the House passed that $1 trillion spending bill to fund the government. So that's where we're at. In the meantime, what's really big is this looming Republican vote. Well, Republicans saying they have the votes to repeal and replace Obamacare. The House of Representatives will hold it on Thursday on what they call compromise legislation. It would end that logjam that has delayed advancing the president's campaign promise to repeal the law. House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy and most of the Republican leadership now feel they're confident that there is enough support for the bill to pass. And that's where we start here on ATN as we zig and zag in a couple of different directions. I have to tell you that we've been talking about this so much, it's like the false start. You know, oop, I think we do. Maybe we don't. I'm not sure. So time will tell. And that time is now on the clock because I really believe that there will absolutely be that vote. But where will it go? That's the key. Where will it go? It was all about the Comey show. Yes, the FBI director on the Hill testifying. Here's Lindsey Graham on the whole Trump surveillance and wiretapping.
Do you stand by your House testimony on March 20th that there was no surveillance of the Trump campaign that you're aware of?
Correct.
You would know about it if there were. Is that correct?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
All right, that wasn't the only thing. At the Senate hearing, Comey said, other things like he stands by what he did as far as Hillary Clinton is concerned, meaning felt as though with the new information he had to move forward and could not ignore what was in front of him. And just because it happened to be a date in October that was close to the election, he says that anybody would have done the same thing. And therefore he would challenge anybody pretty much to what would you do if you had this information about the emails. And of course we're talking about the emails on the private server of the then Secretary of State. Lots of Comey. And that was one aspect, and you heard the other, was the Donald Trump and wiretapping and surveillance. He rolls off the hill, feels pretty good about his testimony, and the rest is history, because what else is going to change? He talked about Russian WikiLeaks, too, as well, and he said, as far as the timing of the announcements, like I just mentioned, I could see two doors, and they were both actions. One was speak, the other was conceal. And he said that he wasn't going to conceal. And so he said it made him feel terrible. It made him feel nauseous that he might have had some impact on the election. But he said it wouldn't change the decision. Everyone who disagrees with me has to come back to October 28th and stare at this and tell me what they would do. And that goes to the Clinton administration on Russia. And is Russia involved in American politics? Yes, he said, answering a question from Lindsey Graham, like the one you heard there, and said when it comes to preserving the democratic process free from foreign interference, he said Russia is the greatest threat to any nation on earth, given their intention and their ability. On WikiLeaks, he says it crosses a line when it moves from being about trying to educate the public and instead about intelligence porn, is what he called it, frankly. And he said that just pushing out information about sources and methods without regards to interest, without regard to the First Amendment values that normally underlie press reporting, and simply becoming a conduit for the Russian intelligence services or some other adversaries of the United States, it's a damage to the United States. So he was on the Hill for quite a while talking about all the things that I just mentioned that we've seen over and over and over and over again, really since October, some of them even being pushed a little bit harder, especially Russia. But Russia during the election was, and after the election especially, that's when that really came to light. So now you wonder, is Russia, as the New York Times put it, feeling slighted by the administration or not? What's that relationship like? Since the inauguration of President Trump, there have been apparently 3 phone calls with Russian President Vladimir Putin. But he's had the one-on-ones with the British Prime Minister, the German Chancellor, the Canadian PM, the Egypt's President, etc., etc. So watch and see what happens with Russia. Watch and see where that goes. All right, speaking of meetings, here's what Sean Spicer had to say about Abbas and what's different now.
Well, I think the man is different. You look at what the president's diplomacy style is paying dividends.
All right, paying dividends. Here's what he means by this. Trump tells Abbas we'll get it done when he's talking about Israeli-Palestinian a peace deal between the two. Abbas tells U.S. Jewish leaders in a meeting that Trump was good. And therefore, the Palestinian leader says he wants a Mideast peace deal and wanted to meet with the president. And, of course, Abbas is the president of the state of Palestine and the Palestinian National Authority. So we've heard about peace, peace, peace for decades. The goal has eluded everyone and anyone. What would happen if this actually comes about? I mean, what would that be? You know, what would that be like? I'll tell you what, it would be pretty interesting if there was something hardcore that you could attach to that. All right, quickly, let's go to Tom in Baltimore before we get against it. Hey, Tom.
Hey, young lady, I've been meaning to call you. You know, we were predicting, you know, the death. They always come in threes, and we wanted our Eddie money to survive. Didn't want Joni to go, but, you know, if one had to go, you know, I'll take Eddie money still being around.
Yeah, 2 tickets to paradise. 2 tickets to paradise. I've seen him in concert a long time ago, yeah.
You know, we can still enjoy the reruns of Joni and the family there, but Eddie Money, he had to stick around. I was a little worried about Meatloaf, but he's still around as well. I'd like to talk about Comey if we have time.
Ah, Comey, just one word for Comey. What do you say? Oh, I think we lost you. I think we lost you, Tommy. All right, stay with us, everybody.
Will the government protect your family from Iran and North Korea's newest weapon, EMP? We buy guns to protect ourselves, home, health, and car insurance for accidents. Maybe you also have food storage. But how would you keep your refrigerator running in a long-term EMP blackout? Using tested military designs, the Solark EMP-hardened solar generator protects and powers your critical appliances for years without burying items underground or wrapping them in aluminum foil. Unlike other preps, Solark is used every day to help offset your electric bill automatically. Visit PortableSolarLLC.com to learn learn how easily expandable the system is. Solark is the most affordable and powerful solution on the market. The whole system even fits in the back of a pickup or SUV and can install in less than an hour. See for yourself why Solark beats other off-grid systems at PortableSolarLLC.com. Don't wait for the government. Go to PortableSolarLLC.com to learn why Solark is energy insurance for your family.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Think about this. Your community's aging water infrastructure systems are very likely to be contaminated with heavy metals like lead, disinfection chemicals like ammonia, chlorine and chloramines, and pharmaceuticals like statins, pain meds, and antidepressants.
And no, water treatment plants are not equipped to filter these pharmaceutical toxins out.
Protect your family's water supply with the trusted Big Berkey water filter. New NSF EPA certified lab tests show Big Berkey water filters remove chloramines, pharmaceuticals, BPA, pesticides, bacteria, and viruses, all forms of fluoride, and much more. Big Berkey water filters are the original and most trusted on the market, the gold standard in water purification. And our filters last for years at less than 2 cents per gallon. Big Berkey, the one powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get your Big Berkey today. Call 1-877-99-BERKEY or click BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey water filters for the love of clean water.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Tonight, I'll tell you what, this book really caught my eye. It jumped out at me. In fact, I blew something off over the weekend so that I could get further through it. It's called We Are Market Basket, the story of the unlikely grassroots movement that saved a beloved business. And, you know, we do so much business here on America Tonight. We're talking about small businesses and getting connected to people and community. Market Basket is incredibly connected to their community, both in and out of the store. Daniel Corson, one of the authors of that book, joins us now. He's in our virtual green room. And Daniel, this story, Market Basket, for people who don't know, in the Northeast, really in the New England area, how many Market Basket stores are there?
At the moment, they've got about 75 stores, yeah, in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and one in Maine.
Wow. And what happened was, this is a family business. And so the CEO, who was the beloved CEO, suddenly, because of some infighting with his family, and I'll let you flesh that a little bit more, ended up being bounced. And it really changed the way business happened at the supermarket chain, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, sure. The whole thing turned upside down, and this company was shut down. It's almost $5 billion company now. And the CEO, Arthur T. Demoulas, the T is important because he was fired by his cousin, Arthur S. Demoulas. And Arthur T. was running this company for nearly a decade. By all accounts, the company was running on all cylinders, really performing well, growing fast. And then his cousin, who happened to be a majority shareholder, he led the side of the family who were majority shareholders, decided that they wanted to cash out. And people knew that this was going to change the way that this company operated, as it had since 1917. So they saw that he was really, Arthur T., the CEO, was the only obstacle in this plan. And so they fired him, and that's what started this whole protest movement that spanned three states.
Wow. And the protest movement meant that the people working there said, we're not going to do this, and basically went out and started picketing and all that sort of thing. And the community did, too, as well, right?
That's the amazing thing, is how quickly this thing spread. It started with a very small core of mostly executives who were very upset. They were so close with this man. And they said, we don't want to work here unless he's our CEO. And then it quickly spread to people in the warehouse, truck drivers who refused to send shipments out. It spread to the stores where employees at every level of this company, management and frontline workers all together, were really united around this. And then it continued to spill into customers. And it was 2 million people boycotted this store for 6 weeks. They took their business elsewhere. It didn't even stop there, because it also went to suppliers. And many of the suppliers, some of them with multi-million dollar accounts that absolutely depend on Market Basket for their business's survival, they said, until Arthur T's back, we're not doing business with you anymore. It's the most incredible thing I've ever come across in my years in academia and studying business.
Yeah, I just think it's an incredibly powerful story and speaks to company culture. So what does that say about Market Basket's company culture?
Yeah, it has a very unique company culture, and I think there's a lot to admire there. I mean, one thing they do is they really take care of their people as family. And a lot of companies say that, but this company has this rare quality about it where so many employees, they give their colleagues rides. When people face a hardship, which all of us do, people at this company tend to rally around each other and help each other out. Sometimes it's, a loan or something. Sometimes it's a ride. And a lot of this is coming from the CEO himself. I can't tell you how many stories I've heard of the CEO going to the funeral service when an assistant manager at one of the stores has a loved one who dies. So maybe like their mother dies or something. Arthur T shows up at the funeral service for maybe 5 or 10 minutes just to make an appearance and pay his respects, and then he's off. But those kind of small little gestures go such a long way at this company.
And so now, well, first of all, a couple of things. They've obviously built that sense of family, like you say, and there's no doubt. And that continues, by the way, because you have a lot of families that work for Market Basket, right? Like a mother, maybe her kid, maybe a cousin. It also becomes that weave of family inside, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I've also met a lot of people who they'll have multiple people in the family who were working at this company. And people like that, during this protest, they were shutting down the company. They were basically saying, we don't know if this company is going to end up shutting down, partly even because of this protest. So they had a ton to risk. I mean, they put everything on the line. They're, three, four, five people in their own family that are putting their jobs on the line for this. So it was a tremendous sacrifice.
What's Arthur T doing now?
Arthur T is back in control. Because of the protest, he was able to take back control of the company and purchase the shares of that other side. The other side had intended to sell it to a big supermarket conglomerate based in Belgium, but they obviously lost interest as this protest continued, and that opened up the road for Arthur T to purchase those shares. So now he's in full control. They're growing like crazy. A lot of people that had never heard of Market Basket before, even people living in the area, are saying, what's this all about?
So it was almost like advertising for them, right?
It really did. It piqued a lot of people's curiosity. I had shopped there a lot myself, and I have a lot of family members who are big fans and part of this almost cultish devotion to the company. But I never really fully appreciated it myself either until I started studying it. And now, I see things there, and I just appreciate it so much. Even just being in the store, there's a certain energy in the place. There's a lot of interaction between employees and customers. This will amaze a lot of people. First of all, they have people in the aisles all the time, so there's always people to ask, which I'm sure many of your listeners will be, will think when the last time they were in the supermarket, how difficult it is just to find someone to ask where that pie crust is, right? That's what always happens to me when my wife sends me out for a pie crust, and there are different types. There's a frozen type of this, and there's never anybody to ask. So it's it really can be frustrating from a customer. And at the checkout aisle, almost all those checkouts are open. They all have two people working there, two-person teams. There's one person at the cash register. There's another bagging groceries. So you go into this store and you feel like you're getting a personal sort of one-on-one attention. And they've stripped out all of the technology, any technology that runs counter to that idea, they've stripped out. So you don't see the self, the automated checkout counters. Those don't appear at this store because they believe that it takes away from that one-on-one sort of experience.
Yeah, so cool. And also, it's like you say, that one-on-one experience. So there is that sense of originality, I bet, is what it's all about.
That's right. Yeah, they follow their own drummer, so to speak, and that played out in this protest as well. And is that when everyone in the world, and I have to admit, you know, I'm ashamed to admit now, even myself included, I said, you know, this, I admire what they're trying to do, but they're not going to be able to succeed at getting back control of this company. But they said, to their credit, they said, we have to get this done. We're going to find a way to get it done. It doesn't matter that the textbooks say you can't go again. Against the board's decision to fire a CEO. We want our CEO back. This is our company. And that's what they did, and they pulled it off.
We're speaking with Daniel Corshon. He's one of the authors of a really awesome book called We Are Market Basket, the story of the unlikely grassroots movement that saved a beloved business, no question about it. As you mentioned, you're in academia, and you're at Drexel. So when you're teaching students or talking with students, do you use this as an example?
Oh, I'm just about to, my poor students are going to get a quiz on it in a matter of hours, so you'll see what their response is. But yes, I mean, I brought this into my class. There's so much to learn from this case. I mean, from my standpoint, a lot of it starts with what's a company in business for in the first place anyway? You know, a hundred years ago, economists used to see business as a way to serve society, and somewhere along the way in the last 100 years, I don't know exactly how, but we've sort of lost sight of that, and we've gotten so focused on the profit generating goal of companies that we've really lost sight of what companies are really there for. And this company, I think, is one of a few models that we have now of companies that say, yes, we're in a sort of mundane business. It's not one that's really exciting to people, the supermarket business, but there's a real importance to this. I mean, we're helping people, and through low prices at the store, through the way that they serve customers, give everyone a lot of respect, the way they deal with employees, there's an importance to this company in the community, and we saw when there was a danger of that company being taken away, you see how people said, no, this is something important. We need to keep this here.
Wow. It's an incredible story. Daniel, thanks so much. Good luck with the book. And Drexel, my mother went to Drexel. I grew up outside of Philadelphia, so go Drexel.
It's a lot of fun to teach here. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Thank you.
Hey, diabetics. Yeah, you. Got a spare hour to waste going to the pharmacy to get your insulin or other meds and supplies every month? I didn't think so. Me either. I've got life going on, which is why I use PillPack. PillPack is an amazing online pharmacy. They package up all my diabetic meds and testing supplies into daily doses and send it to me every month, automatically. All I do is pay my normal copay. PillPack does the rest. I'm serious. This is a free service. They don't even charge for shipping. PillPack handles all the medical insurance stuff and even get with my doctors for my other prescriptions so I don't have to, which is good because that's the stuff I forget. But PillPack remembers everything. They even package up my daily vitamins so I remember to take them too. If you're diabetic, your meds and supplies are life and death, which means you need PillPack. Call right now for this free service. You may even qualify for $25 in free vitamins. 800-560-7310. That's 800-560-7310. Again, 800-560-7310.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis, everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Youngevity for over 17 years, since before it was Youngevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Youngevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Youngevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Youngevity.
Today, how to incorporate your business in just 10 minutes so you won't lose everything if you get sued. Step 1. Stop putting it off. If you're not incorporated and someone sues your business tomorrow, it's not just your business at risk. You can lose everything. Your home, your car, even your life savings. Step 2. Call the following number for a free 10-minute incorporation guide from Incorporate.com. 1-800-945-1063. They don't provide legal or financial advice. They just make incorporating quick and easy. So you can incorporate or form an LLC in just 10 minutes. That number again is 1-800-945-1063. Step 3, congratulate yourself. By taking just 10 minutes to incorporate your business or form an LLC, you protected your home, your car, and your life savings. And that is how you incorporate your business in just 10 minutes. But hurry while they're still giving away these 10-minute incorporation guides for free. Call 1-800-945-1063. That's 1-800-945-1063.
For over 5 years, you've been hearing about the Berkey guy, so you may know a few things about him. For example, you are well aware of the superior quality and effectiveness of Berkey water filters and accessories. But did you know the Berkeys have had independent lab tests done to prove just how effective they are? It's true, and he can email you the test results. Just visit GoBerkey.com. You may also know that the Berkey guy has helped tens of thousands of people get better prepared. Now here's something you may not know. GoBerkey.com has amazing specials and deals all the time on a wide variety of survival and preparedness products, most ready to ship same day. Visit the Berkey guy at GoBerkey.com and be sure to click the red Products on Sale Now button. You can always call toll-free 877-886-3653. Again, that's 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com, home of the Berkey guy.
Welcome to Forbes Books at Bedtime with Kate Delaney and Greg Stebbin.
All right, before I introduce our guest, I want to read something about her. In fact, it would probably fill up 5 hours, but for more than 40 years, Lynn Twist has been a recognized global visionary committed absolutely to alleviating poverty, ending world hunger, and supporting social justice and environmental sustainability. Now, check this out. From working with Mother Teresa in Calcutta to refugee camps in Ethiopia and the threatened rainforests of the Amazon, as well as guiding the philanthropy of some of the world's wealthiest families, Lynn's on-the-ground work has certainly brought her a deep understanding of people's relationship with money. So here's the other part of this. Lynn Twist is the author of The Soul of Money, Transforming Your Relationship with Money and Life. Lynn, thanks so much for joining us on Forbes Books at Bedtime.
Oh, well, pleasure to join you. Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm exhausted just listening to your background. How's that possible? That's crazy. I mean, when you hear that back, I'm sure because you're obviously busy and you are committed to what I mentioned. But when you hear that back, it just must blow your mind. I mean, this usually would be a last question, but I'm going to just ask it out of the gate. Did you ever think that you would have done the things that you've done already in your life?
Oh, my God, no. I had no idea. It's almost like a little bit of a miracle for me to listen to you. But I've been so fortunate to could say be in the right place at the right time when some very large global initiatives got started. And I was, you know, lucky to be in the presence of some great people who were looking at the long view, what's often called the long conversation about our humanity, about our civilization. And when you get engaged in that, you start looking at the big challenging issues and getting engaged with people who are looking at that kind of thing, not looking at it, but also working on it. So I've just been very, very fortunate. And lots of turn of events in my life that put me in the presence of people like Mother Teresa, who, you know, I would have done anything to meet her. But it sort of came through having big, big commitments of my own that led me to be working at her feet. So all of those things that you said are part of the consciousness that I've been brought into, and I'm very grateful for it, actually.
Lynn, I remember when your book came out in 2003, the first edition, The Soul of Money.
Oh, you did?
And, I and lots of other people remember. And by the way, if this is the first time you've heard of the book, get it, read it. If you read it in 2003, get it and reread it, as I am doing now. Because just the title of the book itself, The Soul of Money, Transforming Your Relationship with Money and Life. No matter how much or how little money you have, how can you not look at that? And let me tell you, when you deliver on that promise, The Soul of Money, Transforming Your Relationship with Money and Life, how can you not look at your relationship with money and think, there must be more to it in my life than what I currently have? And so how did you pull this idea of a soul of money together? I mean, was it a light bulb moment or a series of experiences over years? Where did it come from?
Well, I think in all realizations, there's a light bulb, and then that kind of gets affirmed. And so the answer is yes and yes, a light bulb moment, and also over a series of years. Because when you work on big global issues like ending world hunger, you end up realizing you got to raise some money. And I was a philanthropist and a fundraiser, but not on the scale that a project like Ending World Hunger demands. So I began to engage with both Ending World Hunger itself, which took me to places where people are really, really resource poor, like Ethiopia after the famine, or Mozambique after the brutal war there, or India, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, places where people are very, very wonderful, but they're resource poor. I mean, you know, I actually always say I never call people poor, because people aren't poor. People are whole and complete, but living in circumstances that are poor. And when we collapse our financial circumstances with who we are, we make a mistake. Some of these people are some of the most resilient, courageous people on this earth, but they don't have financial resources. And then I also, as a fundraiser, spent a lot of time working with people that you and I would call rich. And that does the same disservice to people, because it makes them think they are their financial circumstances rather than their whole and complete people living in those circumstances. So once I began to distinguish people's financial circumstances from who they are, I began to see people more wholly, more completely. And that was one of the beginning insights for me to see that we're trapped a little bit in this culture of money that demeans life and exalts money above all things. And as a fundraiser, raising hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars over the years, and then also working with people living in incredibly difficult conditions, I started to see how collapsed it all is and how we value ourselves by our financial circumstances rather than who we really are, rather than our inner riches, which are way, way, way more important. And so in that quest of raising money for Ending World Hunger and now raising money to preserve the Amazon rainforest, by the way, now I work with people who never even knew there was anything called money, indigenous peoples of the Amazon. They say you can't eat it, you can't hunt for it, why does anybody want it? And they're completely baffled by how kind of obsessed the rest of us are with money. So all of those experiences gave me insights that don't come from business school or financial planning school or any of those places, but from really working closely with human beings and some of the biggest issues on our planet. And so The Soul of Money, that book, comes out of all of those insights, and the most recent version of it comes a lot out of the work I've done in the Amazon with people who are just discovering money for the first time and trying to figure out, what is this stuff and why is everybody so obsessed with it?
So, Lynn, spending the last 40 years, as you're just describing, working with the richest of the rich, with fundraising, et cetera, and the poorest of the poor, What is it that they have in common, if you had to boil it down?
Well, everyone's afraid. Everyone thinks that they're not good enough. Everyone is trying to make their mark. And more fundamentally, I would say everybody wants to make a difference with their life. Everybody does. Even the most humble people and the most overwhelmingly wealthy people really want to make a difference with their life. And they get caught, we all get caught in the money system, which sort of demeans our capacity to make our mark and makes money the exalted scorecard of everything. When in fact, the real scorecard that we crave is making a difference, making a contribution, being of use, having our life matter. And that can be done with money, obviously, very, very well, but it also can be done not through money, but through the way we live, the choices we make, the wholeness and completeness of the way we interact with each other. And then money isn't the only scorecard then. If we can make other scorecards as important, in fact, even more important than money, then money can be the fuel towards that destination rather than the destination. We get a little bit confused sometimes, and we make accumulation of money the destination in life rather than a destination of a higher purpose of making a real significant contribution to humanity or to our community or to our family or to our company. But when we know that money is just one of the ways we measure our success, our value, but not the ultimate way, we live a much more fulfilling life. And then money is a useful tool to get us to that goal rather than the goal itself.
She's Lynn Twist. We're talking with, she's the author of the book, The Soul of Money, Transforming Your Relationship with Money and Life. And who does not want to have that kind of transformed relationship in their lives? The book first came out in 2003. It's just been republished or re-released, a new edition a few weeks ago with a new foreword by Jack Canfield and a new introduction by Lynn. And Lynn, I guess one of my questions for you is, the book first came out in 2003. It's now 2017. Why now?
Well, the publisher, W.W. Norton, contacted me and said, you know, this book is more relevant now than it's ever been. I wrote it before the big financial meltdown and financial crisis, and it somehow is a tonic for many, many people who are caught in the chase. And the kind of central theme of the book is, in many ways, there's many themes, but I would say the central theme is recognizing the experience of sufficiency, of enough, not in a way that you don't continue to expand your revenue source, but from a place of complete wholeness rather than scarcity. I talk a lot about the mindset of scarcity, which is rampant in a consumer culture, in a money culture. And the mindset of scarcity seems to be ever more rampant now than ever before. And the people are scrambling for more and more and more and more and more in an indiscriminate, sort of unconscious way. And that, you could say, is many ways the source of the financial crisis, crossing a line of greed and avarice rather than just taking care of ourselves. So when the publisher asked me if they could reissue the book, I was delighted, but also began to really relook at our culture now, 14 years later after I wrote the book. And one of the things I think is important to the point I make, and I think it's important to say this, is the financial crisis that we went through in 2007-2008, ecological economists, now that I work in the environment, I've learned that ecological economists in 1987, long ago, discovered that we were using more resources than the Earth can regenerate. And the way they talked about it then was saying we were using our ecological credit card that we can never pay back, using the capital. And they predicted in 20 years there would be a huge financial crisis to match the ecological crisis. Eco, you know, the economy is a subset of the ecology. We forget that. We think the ecology is a subset of the economy that is there for us to use. But no, it's the other way around. So given that we're in ecological debt, we're also now in economic debt, and they're related. And that was another point that I think the publisher wanted me to make.
All right, Lynn Twist, fascinating stuff. No doubt we're going to continue this conversation, Greg, in our next segment here when we come back tomorrow on Forbes Books at Bedtime. Thank you.
Have you racked up more than $10,000 in credit card debt? Are you barely getting by, making minimum payments? You should know. The credit card companies are tricking you into thinking there's no way out. Credit card companies would rather you didn't know that there are ways you can become debt-free and you don't have to pay the entire amount you owe. There are debt relief programs that help people like you escape overwhelming credit card debt. National Debt Relief has helped tens of thousands of people just like you reduce more than $500 million of debt. National Debt Relief has helped so many people, they're A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau. You don't have to declare bankruptcy or take out a consolidation loan. You have the right to settle your debt for a mere fraction of what you owe. Reduce a large portion of your debt now. Call National Debt Relief at 800-314-7417. 800-314-7417. That's 800-314-7417.
We use cell phones against our heads every day. But now, a landmark U.S. government study confirms increased health risks from exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The time to protect yourself is now. The solution is Defender Shield. Proudly made in the USA, Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation emitted from cell phones, tablets, and laptops. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. Use discount code DEFENDER for 10% off. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in EMF radiation protection.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down and, I have to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Do you know what's lurking in your water? More than 200 contaminants could be sitting there just waiting for your glass. With a ProPure water filter, start enjoying clean and great-tasting water today. ProPure filters, independently tested, latest water filter technology. ProPure systems do not require electricity and are easy to set up and easy to use. To find out more, visit your authorized ProPure dealer or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com.
I'm happy to announce that I have a brand new single that's just been released in Britain. And, it's a song I'm very proud of because it was the first song I ever wrote that became a hit. It was my first number one. And the United Nations has declared 1975 to be International Women's Year. And they have chosen this song as their theme. I think you know the one I mean.
Welcome back to America Tonight. You know, we're watching what's happening with Hillary Clinton, and she's a very polarizing figure. Some people really embrace her, and some people don't like Hillary Clinton. But the bottom line is, a lot of that has to do with power and females, and we're seeing that shift with CEOs, etc. So in whether it's politics or business or other walks of life, it's interesting to look at the female's role and how things have evolved and changed. Kim Azzarelli is with us. She's in our virtual green room, and she's co-authored a book called Fast Forward, How Women Can Achieve Power and Purpose. Kim, thanks for hanging with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first of all, when you go to interview people and you start to think of women, you go through the list in your mind, how did you decide who were the right people from business and politics and that kind of thing to pick out?
I mean, a lot of the folks that we interviewed were people that we've worked with over the years. I co-authored this book with Ambassador Milan Verveer, who was the first global ambassador for women. And between us, we've been working on these issues for a long, long time. And so we really picked people who we felt really represented, real progress in the world, but also, different countries, different geographies, and different socioeconomic strata.
Okay, so and in those interviews, you did you interviewed people like Sheryl Sandberg, and everybody knows her from her Facebook role and other things, and of course, Lean In, that book, and Madeleine Albright, who just made a little cameo appearance on a CBS show called Madam Secretary, which I thought was pretty clever. What was Madeleine what was Madeleine Albright like? I met her once, just briefly, but we didn't have a lot of time to talk. What is she like?
Well, Madeleine's obviously an amazing woman leader who Milan has worked with for many, many years. I mean, she, for us, really, really represents how women are breaking through to first, obviously, first woman Secretary of State. And also this concept that, you know, women really need to be helping each other on the way up to lift as they climb, so to speak. And Madeleine really represents that well.
Yeah, has it been in the past, and I've heard other women say this, besides broadcasting, I'm in the speaking business, and I've had other women speakers tell me, boy, I wish there were more women speakers, and I really push for that, but there's kind of a pushback to have, as, you know, female speakers, that it's much more common to have male speakers. Is that changing?
Yeah, I think we're at a very important moment, actually, right now, where we know that the data is sort of in, it's empirical, that women are driving both economic and social progress. And, you know, we have a great report from McKinsey from a couple of weeks ago that basically says that if we closed the gender gap and we allowed women to participate, we would have something like $12 to $28 trillion of GDP growth worldwide by 2025. So it's very, you know, the evidence is in. We know that women being in leadership positions makes a huge difference for companies, for countries. And I think what's different about this moment is that leaders, men and women, are recognizing the real benefits of allowing women to fully participate. And so I do think there is a change happening.
And you talk, the women you talked to, you know, you did interviews with 70 women, and it included, like, Diane von Furstenberg. It included the actress American Ferrara, who is Ferrera, who's just been tremendous and had a tremendous career. And what did you talk to them about? Did you ask them about their own power and realizing when they sort of had achieved that?
Yeah, I mean, the two that you just picked are just such great examples of women who have achieved notoriety and power and influence, but then wanted to use that for something bigger than themselves. So we say use their power for purpose. And I think Dionne is such a great example of someone who, you know, amazing career, you know, and amazing fame, and she could sort of just sort of live her life and not really care about giving back. But, you know, she is so driven by wanting to use her power to give a voice to what she calls the voiceless, or to other women who she feels that she can help through what she does every day, which is obviously design and fashion, but also through what she does with things like the DBF Awards, really giving you know, support and leadership and grants to women leaders around the world whom you haven't heard of. So I think Dionne's a great example. America's another great example, because a lot of what we've learned from this book is that as women ascend to power, they're increasingly using their power for purpose and sort of redefining what power looks like. And America's a great example, because what she really stands for in our mind is you can use whatever you have to affect change. So she became this amazing actress, and at a certain point, you know, 9/11 had happened, and she felt, well, really, what am I really doing for the world? And through her acting, she realized that she could really have an impact on people and be a role model for other Latina women and other women in general through her acting, and to get positive messages across. And so she's using her acting in a way that she feels can have make a big difference. And that's chronicled in the book as well.
Did you talk at all about how men feel about it? Are men embracing this idea a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. We interviewed 70 leaders, and we say, you know, a lot of women and a few good men. But the reality is that there are men and women all over the world now, particularly men leaders, who are championing this issue. And as I mentioned earlier, there's this concept of the data. So Bob Zelick of the World Bank has this great quote where he says, gender equality is smart economics. Or Muhtar Kent of Coca-Cola saying that women are the largest and fastest growing economic force in the world today. Or even Prime Minister Abe of Japan, who came to Davos, you know, the World Economic Forum, and said, listen, I can't grow the Japanese economy unless women get to participate equally. So men get it, and they recognize that it's not just the right thing to do, but it's also the smart thing to do. And so you see this whole sort of new way of thinking about women's issues that's not women's issues, that's human issues, and how women could be key to fast-forwarding to a better world for everybody.
Yeah, so in the book, too, you talk about how women can take the next step. What did you hear from the people that you interviewed? What any woman who picks up the book and reads, what can they do to improve the world and their circumstances?
Well, that's, for me, personally, the biggest takeaway from this whole experience, which is you don't have to be the CEO to have power, and you don't have to be a huge philanthropist to make an impact. I think the key takeaway for each person is that we each have to find our own power. We have to understand our own unique strengths and skills and understand where we sit and then figure out what motivates us, what gives us that purpose, because the book really shows us through interviews with people like Dr. Ebi Elahi, who was a surgeon who came back from Cambodia and really changed a lot of people's perspectives on how they could use what they have. So you have to think about what you have, find your purpose, because we know purpose is the thing that really gives you life satisfaction long term, more than happiness. There's this great professor of happiness at Harvard called Dr. Gilbert, and he basically says, he echoes a lot of the research, which says if you get outside of yourself and you help other people, it really adds to life satisfaction. So he says, go volunteer at a homeless shelter. You may not help the homeless, but you're definitely going to help yourself. So for each woman, it's to know your own power, find your purpose, what gives you meaning, what motivates you, and then connect with like-minded people who give you the energy, because life isn't always easy. You know, you have to, every day can be hard, but if you find like-minded people who share your purpose, then from wherever you sit, you can make a difference. And not only does it change the world outside, but it changes the world inside you as well, because you start to see your life through a different perspective. And I think for me, that's the most important takeaway from this book, which is it's not about being the CEO. Yes, we want more women leaders at all levels, but for each of us, wherever we sit, we can make a difference, and we can change the way we look at the world, and we can change the way the world then basically operates going forward.
I love it. We're speaking with Kim Azzarelli and the book she co-authored, How Women Can Achieve Power and Purpose. Did you have a favorite interview? I know that's hard with as many people that you interviewed.
That is hard. I mean, it's really hard for me to pick. I mean, I think my favorite, well, one, talking about this week, we have the ESPNW conference, and I think one great example from a corporate perspective is Laura Gentile, who really made the case for women and girls at ESPN to show that why ESPN should really invest in ESPNW and why girls love sports and why women in leadership positions. 94% of C-suite women leaders say that they've participated in sports in some way. So I think that's a great example. But, I mean, then there's, examples from all over the world, from Africa. I mean, the interviews were amazing. But again, for me, the big takeaway that all these women and men leaders feel that purpose is important, and to put purpose as part of your work creates a whole different trajectory for your life and for your career. And I think, what we learned also is that it's not just women who want purpose in their work or purpose in their lives. Millennials are demanding it. 60% of millennials say that they want to work for a company that has purpose. So this whole question of life, work-life balance and sort of what are we really trying to achieve, I think why it's so important for women leaders to be part of the conversation is because they're looking at success maybe slightly differently. And I think both men and women want that.
Yeah, well said. I mean, it sounds like you could even do a part two. Is there any plans to do another book? You could interview probably 70 more women.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, what's really interesting, and I think what we really all need to think about, and part two would be really more focusing on this concept of purpose and why each of us really needs to rethink how we define success for ourselves, because we're so used to seeing certain models of success. And frankly, that might be a little outdated at this point. And Dr. Elahi, he talks about, having this larger arc of purpose, which then the day-to-day episodes of your life become sort of dusty storms. And when you have that larger purpose, it really helps you frame what your life is about.
I agree with you. I think that's what happens. We get caught up in the day-to-day, no doubt about it. Kim Azzarelli, the book is called Fast Forward, How Women Can Achieve Power and Purpose. Pick it up. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Yeah, and also we can learn more at SenecaWomen.com.
I love it. Great. Thank you so much. You were terrific.
Thank you so much.
The answer to being in control of your own healthcare is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Bad theater seats, cheap Halloween masks, my apartment, all things with obstructed views. Add to these large trucks and buses. 18-wheelers and large buses have big blind spots and, like my apartment, they don't always have the best view. Bus and truck drivers deal with blind spots around the entire vehicle. Always take care not to ride alongside or too close behind them. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.